Welcome to Carbon Compass, where we explore meaningful conversations around driving South Africa towards a sustainable future. This podcast is brought to you by Brundtland, where we use our in-house expertise to break down complex climate and sustainability topics in a way that is both accessible and actionable. Brundtland is a purpose-built consultancy committed to empowering people to create a sustainable planet. We help key stakeholders navigate the complexities of a carbon-constrained world, while balancing the needs of today with the ability of future generations to meet their needs in a responsible and equitable manner. Having successfully issued and commercialized over 7.5 million carbon credits across various sectors and technologies, Brundtland has established itself as a leading carbon revenue generation partner in Southern Africa. I'm Joseph Frymont, a sustainability consultant at Brundtland, and I'll be your host for today's episode. I'm joined by Henk Saar, one of our partners and the head of the carbon finance business. With over 20 years of experience within the carbon industry, Henk brings a deep knowledge into how the carbon market is evolving, both in South Africa and globally. In this episode, we'll be discussing carbon credits from conception to carbon commercialization. Whether you're a project developer looking to issue carbon credits, an intermediary looking for opportunity, or even just a curious observer, we hope to cover all that you need to better understand carbon credits. All right, Henk, before we dive into it, a quick question. Carbon credits have been around for decades now and are playing an increasingly important role at the corporate and national level. But public understanding still seems to be limited. Why do you think that is?
Hi, Joseph. Oh, this is a good question. I think because it's a complex thing to get your head around. You know, a carbon credit exists as a result of something you didn't do, which is always a complicated aspect, right? It's how do I prove something I didn't do? I can only prove something I did do. That's why I think it's still a bit of a mystical area.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, with that in mind, let's dive straight into it. Henk, before we start, could you remind us again what carbon credits actually are and how they support climate action?
Yeah, so a carbon credit, in my mind, is the difference between greenhouse gas emissions before your intervention and after your intervention, right? This intervention can take many forms, but if you have emissions before you do something and you have emissions after you made your intervention at the same activity level, that's where you can claim carbon credits in that gap. Obviously, these carbon credits are then used as a credit, right? In the same fashion as they would in the financial world, to offset an expenditure, or in this case, emissions somewhere else. And as a result of that, they represent a value. And as a result of that, they are independently verified and needs to be surrounded by a whole bunch of quality assurances.
So how are carbon credits actually realized?
Yeah, so the on-the-ground activity is exactly that. It's exactly what we discussed about just now. You have emissions, and you do something that reduces the amount of emissions, and in between those two levels are emission reductions. To give you an example, say in South Africa, you know, the majority of electricity is made by Eskom, who makes the most of its electricity by burning coal. That means that every unit of electricity that Eskom puts on the national grid results in greenhouse gas emissions. If you would then build a wind farm, you would basically generate the same electricity, but you would have zero emissions. That difference per unit of electricity, from an emission point of view, that's where you can claim a carbon credit. Obviously, you can come up with all sorts of creative angles. So, well, I did this differently today, so therefore I reduced emissions, therefore I claim carbon credits. There's a whole set of rules around the fact that not all things that reduce emissions rise to the level that you can claim carbon credits for it.
Right. That makes sense. So who actually sets these rules?
Independent carbon standards. Now, there's a wide range of carbon standards. I think the original, the core original standard was established by the UNFCCC. It's called the CDM, the Clean Development Mechanism. It developed a whole process and infrastructure for claiming carbon credits along a whole set of rules. These rules have then later on been adopted and converted by different carbon standards that were established over time. I think the latest count I read somewhere is that there's 22,000 carbon standards around the world. We only operate sort of with the three or four main carbon standards applied globally.
So these standards obviously play a crucial role in safeguarding the quality of the carbon credits.
Correct.
How do they do this?
First of all, the process is set up, well, split into two phases. One is what they call the registration, and the second one is called the verification and issuance phase. And during the registration phase, you need to demonstrate to a, well, first to an independent auditor, and then to the carbon standard itself, that you are implementing your project in such a way that it meets all the rules that they set out. They set out these rules at different levels, first at the standard itself, and then at what we call individual methodologies and tools, which specifically focus on either the type of project you're implementing or a specific aspect of how you claim your carbon credits.
Okay, so now that we know what carbon credits are and where they are issued, how do we actually get to the point where they can be issued?
Carbon credits are always issued retrospectively, right? So whatever you do in the carbon credit process, you cannot issue carbon credits unless the actual intervention has been implemented. Or in our example, until the wind farm is actually switched on. Parallel to that, to the building of this wind farm, you would register your project. That's the part of the process we spoke about. And then during operation, you will monitor all the relevant variables from that wind farm. Obviously, for a wind farm, that's not overly complicated. You measure the amount of electricity that your wind farm makes and puts onto the grid. And then you get this auditor back, this independently, who then conducts an independent verification on the amount of electricity that your wind farm has put on the grid and the amount of emission reductions that are a result of that.
Maybe let's break this carbon credit project cycle down further for our listeners. Starting at getting a project registered on a carbon registry, what practically needs to take place for this to happen?
A couple of steps. This registration process starts with what we call the project design or the project description, depending on the terminology and the standard you use, which is basically a template that you complete set out by the carbon standard, where you apply this methodology as approved by the standard, and you collect and aggregate all the sort of supporting documents on how your wind farm is going to operate, where your wind farm is going to operate, et cetera, et cetera, how it's going to be connected to the electricity grid. The list goes on and on. That information then gets submitted to this independent auditor who's accredited by the specific carbon standard. And the auditor comes out and checks if your wind farm is actually what you say it is and that it operates in the way that you say it does and if that meets the requirements by the standard, either at the standard level and at the methodology level. If this is all accepted, then the auditor signs off on what they call the validation stage, and he submits a positive validation opinion to the standard, who then does a final check, and the project becomes registered at that point. It's important to keep in mind that that doesn't mean you now automatically will get carbon credits. It actually only means that the standard confirms that if you implement and operate your project as you've written down, you're eligible to claim carbon credits, which then happens in the next verification stage.
So before we move on to the next phases, you had mentioned choosing a methodology as part of the project design phase. What exactly is that?
Well, you can imagine that, you know, there's many different ways that you can reduce emissions, and they all are, you know, they vary. And therefore, the way you would be able to determine how it reduces emissions also differs. Well, example, in the wind farm, obviously you want to know, you need to have a method to work out what the carbon intensity of the electricity grid is, right? So how many tons of CO2 does the national grid emit per megawatt hour that is generated in relation to your project? The methodology outlined step by step on how you would be able to work that out. A different example would be, say you would have a landfill. Landfills, because of all the rotting potato peels, emit methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. If you would do an intervention there, you would cap the landfill, trap the methane, extract the methane with pipes, and then burn that and convert it into electricity. Obviously, measurements around the amount of emission reductions resulting from the methane not going into the atmosphere from your landfill, but into a pipe that feeds into an electricity generator, requires a whole set of different calculations. Therefore, that applies to a different methodology. Long story short, different project types require different methodologies. There are about 200 methodologies approved under the main standards worldwide, and they cover the vast majority of emission reduction activities that you can think of.
Great. Okay, so now that we have a registered project and it has been vetted and approved by these carbon standards, what happens next?
So once a project is registered, it needs to operate, right? We can only claim carbon credits retrospectively. So the project itself needs to operate for a certain period of time to generate a theoretical amount of carbon credits, reduce a theoretical amount of emissions. Once that volume has gotten to a substantial enough size to carry the cost and effort of all the verification activities, we, on behalf of the project, would put together what they call a monitoring report, which uses the methodology and the project description as a starting point to work out, based on the actual monitoring information, how many emissions have been reduced over a specific period. That documentation gets submitted to another auditor, also independently appointed by the carbon standard. He comes out and checks if indeed we've generated this amount of emission reductions. He would check, okay, you say X amount of electricity has been put on the grid by our wind farm. Let's go have a look at that electricity meter and see if it actually says what you say it says. Once he's satisfied that you've actually worked it out in the correct manner, in accordance to what you promised in the methodology or promised in the PDD in accordance with the methodology, he then goes ahead and signs off on this verification report. The verification report and the monitoring report then get submitted to the standard itself. They do a final check. And if that's successful, or if they're okay with the outcome, they issue you the carbon credits into your carbon credit bank account. From there, you can trade them like any online commodity.
Interesting. This seems like quite a rigorous process. How long, in your experience, does it take before credits can actually be sold?
So we normally work on about 12 months for the registration phase, but we've done it substantially quicker. I think the quickest we ever done it was in 4.5 months, but that's more the exception than it is the rule. So we work on 12 months, say you would start operation of your project on the day that it get registered, and you would run it for a year to generate sufficient emission reductions to go into the verification process. The verification process would then take another, let's say, 6 months. The quickest part is the selling, right? Once issuance happens, you can just transfer them, sell them instantly on the spot. So 1 year of registration, a year of operation, half year for verification. That gets you to 2.5 to 3 years from start to finish. So this is in no way a quick process. Obviously, after that, following verifications happen quicker because you don't need to register and you operate while you're doing your first and second verifications.
All right, that makes sense. So along this process, what sort of costs can a project developer expect to incur to realize these carbon credits?
We always look at it from, there's three cost components. One, there's the carbon advisor. That would be our cost in this case, right? The people that write the project description, that populate all of the sections in the template, that adhere to the methodology, that provide all the calculations and background information to the auditor. That would be the second part of the cost, the independent auditor, or DOE or VVB, depending on the standard and the type of acronym. Those costs, they come out, they do an independent audit, either at the validation or the verification state. They cost money. And then the standard itself. The standard itself has two types of costs. One, along the process. So if whenever you submit documentation towards the carbon standard, they charge you a fee. And at the end, they charge you a fee per carbon credit they issue to you. So those would be the three cost components.
Okay, thanks. So we had asked our audience on LinkedIn for some questions on what they would like to know about carbon credits. One of the more frequently asked questions was about additionality. Could you give a brief overview of what that is?
It's a fundamental aspect of what a carbon credit is. So when we started, we talked about the definition of a carbon credit is reduction in emissions between before you implemented your activity and after you implemented your activity. That implies that your activity is not already something you would have done in any case, right? It's a deviation from the business as usual scenario. Additionality is the concept whereby you need to demonstrate that you're deviating from the business as usual scenario. You're doing this in addition to or additional. That's what the concept of additionality is. I do find it always a bit concerning that this concept is taking on a life of its own and sort of scares away potential project developers. There's many different routes to demonstrate additionality. First time a technology is used in a specific country, which would be a deviation from a business as usual scenario, et cetera, et cetera. Most project developers diverge towards what they call financial additionality, which means that it's a diversion from your business as usual if you would invest in a project that is loss-making. Obviously, project developers are not in the business of making losses, hence they tend to shy away from that kind of additionality understanding.
Are there any other key things that our listeners should be aware of regarding carbon credits and project development?
The most important part is to not leave it too late. All of these other aspects can be managed. Okay, they're not risk-free, but they can be managed. What you cannot do is leave it too late and try to retrospectively claim a carbon credit project. As you mentioned in the beginning, I've been doing this for 20 years. We, on a regular basis, still see people that spoke to us 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. So, we started working on this carbon credit project. We then left it, but we would like to pick it up now again. That's not how carbon credits work. You need to get this process going in parallel to the development of your project. You cannot do it as an afterthought. Hence, I think whenever you feel you could develop a project and it has a carbon credit component to it, develop it in parallel to you developing your project. And don't make the mistake of thinking, well, I'm busy with the project now, I'll come back to the carbon credits afterwards, because that's not how the system works.
That makes sense. So now that you've outlined some of the key points for project developers, our audience was also interested in some of the key challenges in carbon credit generation. Could you provide some challenges in the carbon credit industry as a whole you have come across throughout your years of experience?
I think one of the biggest challenging is certainty of outcome. This registration, verification, and issuance process is uncertain by nature. Again, back to its sort of first principles, it's trying to demonstrate something you didn't do, which comes with a level of uncertainty with it, sort of by definition. The other thing I find over time that has changed recently in over the last couple of years in South Africa, but historically, if you go into this relatively unknown process, as a project developer, you would like to know, well, what am I doing this for, right? What is the outcome? How much would I get for these carbon credits and where can I sell them, et cetera, et cetera? The carbon credit price globally and until relatively recent locally was all over the map. It was very high, it was very low, and anything in between. That makes it very difficult for a project developer to make a decision based on a sort of forward price curve. Because it could be that by the time these credits come out, they're worth for virtually nothing. Or it could be the other way around. It could be worth a lot. In South Africa, since the introduction of the carbon tax and the fact that you can use carbon credits to a certain extent as offsets against the amount of emissions of which you have to pay tax, and the fact that the tax rate is legislated into the future, that creates a more predictable forward price curve. And therefore, that main challenge that you see globally, you don't have so much at this moment in time in South Africa, which is a good thing, which also gives, you know, rise to a growing market at this moment in time.
So before we close, we know that there are some concerns around the validity of carbon credits and how effective they are as emission reduction strategies. What might be some of these concerns, and do you think there's any truth to them?
I think there's truth to them. I think that the main concern in the market in that sense is the quality of the carbon credits, in the sense that, are these real? Are these not an overestimation of the difference between my business as usual emissions and my emissions after my intervention? Are they actually different between my business as usual emissions and my project emissions, or are these the same? In other words, is the project not additional? So there's lots of concerns around the carbon credits being real, and the amount of carbon credits being issued on an individual project basis. This is obviously a rule-based system. So this only improves with the rules as set by the different standards evolving and becoming better. This is still a relatively new, even though it's been around for 2 decades in different forms and at different activity levels, it's still a relatively new system. So as long as everybody is aware that this is a system under development, and that mistakes in the past should not lead to scrapping the whole systems, but should lead to lessons learned and improvements, I think you'll get there in the end. But the idea that every carbon credit now has to be a perfect carbon credit is unfortunately not achievable.
Thanks for that. So that brings us to the end of today's conversation. A big thank you to Henk for all his insights. Today we discussed what carbon credits are, the carbon credit cycle, some practicalities, and some key concepts such as additionality. We hope that this episode helped you to understand the carbon market better and showed you how they support global climate mitigation. If you're curious to know how the South African carbon market works in practice and our outlook on its evolution, be sure to check out episodes 1 and 2, where we discuss the state of the carbon market. Also, be on the lookout for the 2025 updated edition of the State of the Carbon Market coming soon. In the meantime, please be sure to leave a review or share this episode to grow our community. You can also learn more about our work by visiting our website, www.brundtland.co.za, or following our LinkedIn page. For business inquiries, please contact us via email at info@brundtland.co.za or telephonically on 011-4477-892, and we'd be happy to discuss potential ways for collaboration. Thanks so much, and see you guys at the next episode.